to be with you today. We had a good week at camp, and I'm a little tired. And those of you that were there with me, I know you're tired too. And if I have to stay awake to preach this sermon, you've got to stay awake to listen to it, okay? But we had a good week. I'll just tell you a little bit about it. We had a spiritual theme of in need of Christ, and it was based on the song that we have sang here together. Keith Stonehart wrote the Bible class material, so there were classes on in need of grace, in need of peace, in need of love, in need of strength, and in need of Christ. I, as the director, did not personally teach one of those classes, but I went around and listened to others that did, and they were excellent studies, and I think everybody benefited from that. Gary participated in helping teach one of those classes as part of a teaching team, and Gary, of course, you know, he did an excellent job on that, and I appreciate the work that he did. It was a very, very encouraging week all the way around, and there were, you know, four young people that were baptized into Christ during the week, and I found out yesterday there was another one that as soon as he got home, he wanted to be baptized yesterday. So, and probably countless others that were encouraged in many different ways that we may not even know how it affected them and the good things that will come from that. And Prince and Teresa Schatz were there with us, and it was good to spend the week with them. And I know a lot of you know them and love them. Tonight, I don't know if Ethan, I can't remember if Ethan announced it, but there's a singing at Gardendale Civic Center tonight at 7 o'clock. And so if you can go to that, I know you'll be encouraged by it. This morning, I want to talk about more in our series of people that Jesus befriends. Critics sometimes have tried to portray the apostles or the disciples of Jesus as mindless followers who would accept anything that Jesus said and did. And sometimes these men are depicted as people who they desired a Messiah so badly that they would follow anyone who made the claim to be the King of the Jews. But that's certainly not a fair assessment of these men. When we look at the study on people who Jesus befriends, we have seen many different types of people that he comes in contact with, and the apostles and disciples were those who were clearly not mindless followers or accepted faith blindly. In fact, there's many times when it seems that they are lacking faith, and even as they see what Jesus does, and a situation comes up where they should have more faith because of what they've seen in the past, they don't necessarily do that. So what I'm saying is that these people that Jesus chose were not chosen because they were gullible. They were not chosen because Jesus was desperate to have somebody follow him. But what we have seen throughout these studies is they tended to be average of people, normal men with occupations who had been convinced by Jesus that he was the Messiah. And in today's study, we'll learn about the Apostle Philip. So in John chapter 6, 1 through 14, and also in Matthew 14, 13 through 21, we read about the feeding of the 5,000. Bob, which one of those verses I have you read this morning? Was it John or Matthew? Okay. We'll turn over to the book of John chapter 6. John chapter 6, verses 1 through 14. See, I would have known that if I hadn't been brain dead from camp. John chapter 6, verses 1 through 14. After this, Jesus went away to the other side of the Sea of Galilee, which is the Sea of Tiberias, and a large crowd was following him because they saw the signs that he was doing on the sick. Jesus went up on the mountain, and there he sat down with his disciples. Now, the Passover, the feast of the Jews, was at hand. Lifting up his eyes then, and seeing the large crowd that was coming toward him, Jesus said to Philip, "Where are we to buy bread so that these people may eat?" He said this to test him, for he knew what he would do. Philip answered him, 200 denarii would not buy enough bread for each of them to get a little. One of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said to him, "There is a boy here who has 5 barley loaves and 2 fish, so that they, but what are they for so many?" Jesus said, "Have the people sit down." Now there was much grass in the place, so the men sat down, about 5,000 in number. Jesus then took the loaves, and when he had given thanks, he distributed then to those who were seated, so also the fish, as much as they wanted. And when they had eaten their fill, he told his disciples, "Gather up the leftover fragments, that nothing may be lost." So they gathered them up and filled 12 baskets with fragments from the 5 barley loaves left by those who had eaten. When the people saw the sign that he had done, they said, "This indeed is the prophet who has come into the world." And so there is John's account of the feeding of the 5,000. So here what we see is that Jesus and his apostles have crossed the Sea of Galilee. When they land on shore, they see a large crowd coming toward him. And Jesus, as happens many times when he sees a crowd, he has compassion on them. And he's even beginning to heal some of those that are sick. In Matthew's account, in Matthew chapter 14 and verse 15, it says, "As evening approached, the disciples came to him and said, 'This is a remote place and it is getting late. Send the crowds away so that they can go to the villages and buy themselves from food.'" And so the disciples here are thinking, you know, that these people need to eat, and there's some compassion involved in that. But what they're thinking is that they need to go away. They need to go to the villages and get food before it's too late. But in John chapter 6 and verse 5, Jesus turns to Philip and says, "You know, where can we buy food? Philip, where can we buy bread to feed all these people?" And it says that he was testing Philip, for he already knew what he was going to do. So what Jesus is asking Philip is really, you know, a seemingly impossible task. At our camp, I told the staff the first day, we've got 350 great kids and we've got 51 other kids. We had 401 kids that were there. And you think about the challenge of feeding that many people. And the kitchen there does an excellent job. In fact, they've got a system where they do family-style dining, and they feed 400 kids and 87 staff, almost 500 people in 20 minutes. Now, that's quite a task to do that, and it's very organized. But here, Jesus has something that is much, much more difficult than that, that these 5,000 people, they need food. And he asked Philip, "How are we going to do this?" Well, Jesus didn't need to ask Philip how that was going to be done. He knew what it was that he was going to do. But it's no small crowd. Matthew chapter 14 says there were about 5,000 men besides the men and women. So it's not just 5,000. There's many, many more than that. You know, perhaps maybe 10,000 more. And you imagine if Jesus turns to you and says, "Where can we buy bread to feed all these people?" I think the appropriate response, if you know the Lord, would, "Well, you know, Lord, that we can do that, that you can do that." You see that kind of response many times in the book of Revelation when John answers quite a few times the angels would ask, you know, what's going on, and Jesus is going to take care of that. But what's important to see is that what Jesus is doing with Philip and the apostles, Jesus is testing Philip because Jesus knew what he was going to do to perform this mass of people to feed them. So rather than performing the miracle, he's using this to test the faith of Philip. How are we going to feed all these people? Philip answered him and said, 8 months' wages would not buy enough bread for each one of these to have a bite. So Philip is really incredulous here. He says, how do you expect us to feed 5,000 people? It would take a small fortune to do this, is what he is saying, to even give everybody just a little bit. So it's interesting that he does, his default answer here is not to see a way around this problem. You know, he's seeing what can be done physically, what it is that can be done with money, that this is an impossible obstacle, and probably can't really believe that Jesus is asking him to find a solution. So Philip's, you know, throwing up his hands. We can't do this. We don't have the money to even scratch the surface of this problem. Also, the account says, chiming in on this, is Philip, who comes in and says, it says, one of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said to him, there is a young boy with 5 barley loaves and 2 fish, but what good is that with this huge crowd? Here's all the food that we can see right now, just these 5 loaves and 2 fishes, but this is not going to be enough with this huge crowd. So, what I'm getting at is none of the disciples are jumping up and saying, Jesus can do this, Jesus can take care of this. They're either saying it's impossible, we don't have the money, or here we've got a few morsels and there's no way that we can feed them with just this little bit of food. Nobody offers the suggestion that Jesus is Lord, he can take care of this. So the application is pretty obvious that Philip is only looking at the physical aspect of this problem. He knows that there is no way for them to feed more than 5,000 people. And he's limiting the capabilities of God, of Christ. God can't work with what we've got here. We just have this boy's snack here. Nothing can be done. So Philip and the disciples failed the test, because remember what Jesus was doing? Jesus asked this question, how are we going to do this, Philip? What was Jesus expecting Philip to do? What was the test? Well, if he sees that there's no way to accomplish this, it seems that Philip has failed that test, because he doesn't seem to think that Jesus can do this. So, that's what they should have realized. They should have realized that Jesus could have done this. So, this is one of these stories that children know very well. And they ended up with so much food when they divided the food that the boy brought. They divided up the 5 loaves and the 2 fish until everyone had eaten. When they were full, they had 12 baskets full of leftovers. So they ended up with more than they started with, which is amazing. Clearly a miracle. Sometimes people can have the same kind of reaction to problems that Philip has. That there seems to be some kind of insurmountable challenge, and there does not seem to be any way out of that, any way to overcome the obstacle. Our first reaction is to go into a crisis mode. What are we going to do? We wring our hands. What are we going to do? We can't sleep at night wondering what it is that we're going to do to fix a problem. One of the things that's emphasized quite a bit at camp is that, it's kind of described as the camp bubble, because you're there with people that share your faith. And, there's few ones here and there that may pull you in the wrong direction, but for the most part, you have a lot of good people that are wanting to do what's right, and they're in an environment where they're not presented with the temptation to do things that are wrong. All the activities that are planned are things that Christians would participate in. And it's it's a lot of fun, and there's a lot of Bible study and a lot of encouragement. But one thing that's constantly mentioned is that this isn't the real world. And when you go out of this, you have to be prepared. And it may seem like those are insurmountable problems that you run into. You know, when everybody is on your side and when everybody's encouraging you and everybody wants you to do the right thing, it's easier when everybody around you, for the most part, is doing the right thing. But when you go back into the world, go back to school, you have to be prepared for that. Is that an insurmountable challenge? It is not. You have to remember the resources that you have. You have the resources that we have with each other in the church, and certainly the resource of going to God in prayer and asking for strength. And here, they're not remembering the resource that they have. Here is this insurmountable problem that's not insurmountable at all, because they have Christ. We may have problems with the family. We fret about what it is that we're going to do. We may have health issues. And how many times that when we're asking what it is that we should do, that we're overlooking the answer? Jesus here is trying to get them to see you've overlooked the answer. That is the test. God is going to help us with these things that we think that we have to fret about. We're not going to limit the power of God, but we shouldn't. I mean, we shouldn't limit the power of God as Philip did here. They saw that God could deal with this obstacle. But too often we're looking at physical things. We're looking at worldly things. We're not looking at God. There's also a similar case in Matthew chapter 15. Matthew chapter 15, which is the feeding of the 4,000. We'll read that starting in verse 29. Matthew 15, starting in verse 29. Jesus went on from there and walked beside the Sea of Galilee. He went up on the mountain and sat down there. Great crowds came to him, bringing with them the lame, the blind, the crippled, the mute, and many others, and they put them at his feet, and he healed them. So the crowd wondered when they saw the mute speaking, the crippled healthy, and the lame walking, and the blind seeing, and they glorified God, the God of Israel. Then Jesus called his disciples and said, I have compassion on the crowd because they have been with me now 3 days and have nothing to eat, and I am unwilling to send them away hungry lest they faint on the way. The disciples said to him, where are we to get enough bread in such a desolate place to feed such great crowd? And Jesus said to them, how many loaves do you have? And they said, 7 and a few small fish. And directing the crowd to sit down on the ground, he took the 7 loaves of fish, and giving thanks, he broke them and gave them to the disciples. The disciples gave them to the crowds. They all ate and were satisfied. They took up 7 baskets full of the broken pieces left over. And those who ate were 4,000 men, besides women and children. After sending away the crowds, he got into the boat and went to the region of Magadan. So here is a similar issue. And this is sometime later during Jesus' ministry in Galilee that these great crowds came to Jesus again for healing. The crowds have been following him for 3 days. Jesus didn't want them to be sent away hungry. The disciples here, again, where can we get enough bread in this remote place to feed such a crowd? It's the same problem, the same issue as before, except for one exception. This time the disciples have a little bit more food. They have 7 loaves of bread instead of 5 and a few fish. I don't know how many a few was, but I'm thinking it's more than the two that they had before. And they've got less people. So a little bit more food, but a little bit less people. 4,000, not including women and children. So rather than look back and say, you know, this seems strangely familiar. That, it's like Groundhog Day. We've been in this situation before. He can solve that problem. But rather than realize that Jesus solved that great problem before, and this time there's a little bit less of a problem, the disciples gave exactly the same response that they did last time. That they're only looking at the physical, and they had forgotten what Jesus had done previously. So what we're saying here is that in the theme of these lessons, the kind of people that Jesus befriends are faith-challenged people. He's trying to teach them faith. The apostles here were faith-challenged people. And many times we can be that same way. How many times is it that God helps you through a problem? And it may be that brethren help you with the issue, that there's something that's come up. It may be a problem with your work, with your job, with your money, with your marriage, whatever it is. And you come through that, and then you forget. And then you have another situation, and then you fret about that in the same way that you may have before. We have a lack of faith that shows up over and over. It's very common, I believe, for someone to have a near-death experience and make a real big commitment to the Lord because they were in a car wreck or something happened or they had a sickness and they're on fire to make this commitment to the Lord because it scared them. But then, months go by, maybe years, and that commitment starts to dwindle because they forget what position that they were in. And it's a shame that happens, but we are faith-challenged people. Our faith sometimes wavers. If Jesus can feed more than 5,000, he can certainly feed this 4,000. If Jesus can use 5 loaves and 2 fish to feed a multitude, he can use 7 loaves and a few fish to feed a multitude. The thing that's very surprising is how patient Jesus is with this situation. If people treated us the same way that we treat God, we would become very frustrated with that. If you continue to come through for people and help people and there's no appreciation or no remembrance of that, that would be very discouraging. How many times must God come through for us to realize that he's going to take care of these little problems? And he's going to take care of the big problems. When kids are small, they often think that their parents can do anything. It may be that, something is broken, some toy or whatever it is, and you tell them, I can't fix this. But you can fix anything, Dad. And you tell them that there's something you can't do, and they'll just respond, you can do it. And it's not, and what you do is you just go out and buy a new one, and they think that you fixed it. When my parents told us that we didn't have enough money to go out to eat, I'd say, write a check. I thought they could do it. They could do anything. God wants us to have that simple trust that a child has. It's amazing sometimes the trust that a child will have in a parent. And sometimes we recognize that the parents may not really be the kind of parents that they ought to be. And you see that all the time. There's some kind of deficiency, some kind of fault, something in the life of the parent that's really, not conducive to being the right kind of parent. But the child has so much trust in that person because it's their mom, it's their dad. God wants us to have simple trust in him that he can do it. And I think that's a really big issue and lesson that we see here in these two examples. Jesus on both occasions, he kind of sets them up, He said, I don't want these people to be hungry. You know, what are we going to do? They said, well, I don't know. You know, I don't know what we're going to do. When they should have known that Jesus could take care of it. And he did. And next time it happens, they forget. He takes care of it again. It's a beautiful lesson in the patience that Jesus has for faithless people that continually forget what he can accomplish and what he can do. There's a lot of encouragement in that for us. We talked about that in one of the classes that Gary was helping teach. Because one of the big lessons that we want in that kind of environment is, yeah, you feel strong now, but what are you going to do when you don't feel strong? And God tells us and gives us examples that he's going to be there for us. He's going to help pick us up. Like 1 John says, we have to keep walking in the light. And as long as we walk in the light, his blood continues to cleanse us from our sin. If we keep on confessing, he keeps on forgiving. And that's an encouragement, because there are going to be times when, just like these disciples, they forget the power that they have. They get a reminder of that, and then they keep going. We need that constant reminder in our life of what God can do. He doesn't want us to fail. He doesn't want us to falter. He wants us to be with him in heaven. He's given us each other. He's given us resources. He's given us these examples showing that he has this patience. You know, Jesus could have reacted totally different to these faithless attitudes. He could have said, I cannot believe that you saw me healed sick. I mean, you saw the beginning of the passage. It talks about these people came to him. He's healing the blind. He's healing the lame. And then, you know, they're hungry and they don't know how that's going to be fixed. If Jesus was snarky like some of us are sometimes, look at what I already did. You think I can't handle this? But Jesus was patient with them and showed what he could do so that they could have faith in him. And we need that faith in him. We need that confidence in him. He can help us. He can help us go to heaven. He's given us the resources to do that. We're going to continue on with this particular lesson tonight and close out this series. But I hope it's something that is an encouragement to you, that when we falter, when we are faithless, Jesus befriends the faithless. He wants to help them build their faith. And so we can be thankful for that, thankful for his patience, and thankful for his love and his sacrifice for us, so that we can have that home in heaven. If we can help you in any way to respond to the gospel, we invite you to come while we stand and sing.